thing to be done.
Causing to be done.
Translation. When the embodied living being
controls his nature and mentally renounces all action, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. You can repeat. When the embodied living being
controls his nature
and mentally renounces all actions,
he resides happily
in the city of nine gates, the material body. Neither working nor causing work to be done. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The embodied soul lives in the city of nine gates. The activities of the body, or the figurative city of body, are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. The soul, although subjecting himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond those conditions if he so desires. Owing only to forgetfulness of his superior nature, he identifies with the material body and therefore suffers. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and thus come out of his embodiment. Therefore, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. In such a controlled life, in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. The nine gates are mentioned as follows: Navadvire Pure Dehi Hamso Leila Yate Bahi Vashi Sarvashya Lokashya Stavarashya Charashya Cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is living within the body of a living entity, is the controller of all living entities all over the universe. The body consists of nine gates: two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, the anus, and the genitals. The living entity in his conditioned stage identifies himself with the body. But when he identifies himself with the body within himself, he becomes just as free as the Lord, even while in the body. But when he identifies himself with the Lord within himself, he becomes just as free as the Lord, even while in the body. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is free from both the outer and inner activities of the material body. We're reading from chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Lord Krishna is describing to Arjuna about performance of duty. He is describing how we can actually become detached from this material body. He has described the body as Navadvare Pure, a city of nine gates. Every one of us have got something in common with these bodies. Anybody here got more than one nose? No, I don't think so. Anybody got more than two eyes? The same two ears? We've all got this city of nine gates. We're living in the city of nine gates, the material body. When you come to live in Abu Dhabi, do you become Abu Dhabi? Is anybody Abu Dhabi here? You are all you're living here in Abu Dhabi. Does it mean you have become Abu Dhabi?
No.
In the same way, we are living in this body. It does not mean that we have become this body. But out of ignorance, we're all thinking, I am this body. This is me, this body. This is our ignorance. And this type of ignorance is causing us repeated suffering in the material world. It is causing us to take birth repeatedly in the different species of life, which the Vedas describe as 84 lakh. Now we have got this human form of life, which is a rare gift, considering that there are only 4 lakh human species, which means there are 80 other lakh different species. Just think how many living entities there are, how many ants, how many mosquitoes, camels, trees. Human beings are rare, actually. So we've got this rare body, human body, but and because it's rare, we value it, but we overvalue it. We think that we have become this body, identifying with this body, and we base all of our actions on this understanding that I am this body. We are thinking that if I make my body happy, I will be happy. We are thinking, if I can make my body comfortable, I will be happy, and I will enjoy forever. But this is avidya. This is ignorance which is causing us to remain in the material world. Human life is meant for freeing oneself from this material world. It is the opportunity to get out of this entanglement of birth and death. It is described, the human form of life is like coming to a crossroads. When you come to the crossroads, you have the choice which way to turn. You can go straight, or you can turn to the left or to the right. Similarly, having this human form of life is like coming to a crossroads. We can make a choice. We have some free will. Which way do we want to go? Would we like to elevate ourselves to the higher planets? Would we like to simply come back again in this world? Or would we like to degrade ourselves down to the lower levels, lower species, or lower planets? Or even more, we could liberate ourselves from all of these different material conditions, beyond the material sky, into the spiritual existence. And even there are choices. We could think of Sayuja Mukti, becoming one with the Brahman, a type of annihilation of our existence. That is not recommended. There is another type of liberation which is acceptable. But actually, a pure devotee of the Lord, one who has understood the message of Krishna, has no interest in karma or jnana. Karma, simply enjoying the fruits of our work. That is not the goal of life, because any intelligent person will understand that simply trying to enjoy the fruits of our life is a temporary affair. How long are we going to be able to enjoy? How long will this pleasure last? Even in the planets of the devas, in the higher planets, Swarga Loka, their pleasure is limited to some particular period of time. It is explained here in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka punaravartino Arjuna, mamupecha tu kuntiya punarjanman navidyate. From the highest planet in the material world, the planet of Lord Brahma, down to the lowest, all are places of misery where birth and death exist. The lifetime of Brahma is certainly very great. It's just one day of Brahma's lifetime is millions of years of our time. And Lord Brahma lives for 100 years. So his lifespan is very great, but it's temporary. He also has to think about death. He's also thinking, when is my death coming? When am I going to have to leave this place? He's in anxiety about this. So karma is not the goal of life. And those who are interested in jnana, thinking about liberating themselves from the material existence, they're also not going to be able to achieve the real goal of life. Because if their jnana is devoid of devotion to the Supreme, it can simply cause them to annihilate their own existence, to deny their own existence. They may free themselves from birth and death, but in their position of so-called liberation, there is no activity. There's simply boredom. Just you can imagine if you will come to the go to some place here in this country, you in Abu Dhabi, you go somewhere into the desert, and there's nothing. There's no buildings. There's no people, there's no highway, there's no motor cars, no gas stations, no supermarkets, no shops, just desert. Will you feel very happy there? Right, you won't feel much enjoyment, there's not much pleasure there. Just simply sand everywhere. And similarly, if you will achieve Sayuja Mukti, entering into the Brahman, it's a similar position. There's nothing there. There's no variety. Just simply a oneness of Brahman. No activity, no relationships, nothing. And the result is that eventually we want to leave. Just like Prabhu said before we began the class, please don't leave before the lecture is over. Sometimes when you're listening also to lecture, you feel a bit bored. We'll try to keep you interested. But Brahman is like much more of an impact of boredom. And similarly, entering into that spiritual sky without devotion to the Supreme, we'll be quickly bored and we will fall down back into the material world. So neither karma nor jnana can solve the problems of life. They are simply like two witches which will bring us more and more trouble and suffering. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is teaching us a solution to the problems of life. To understand our real position as living entities in relationship to the Supreme Lord. That we are fragmental parts of that Supreme Lord, and our relationship is to serve Him, to connect with Him by service, devotional service. Devotional service is just as this body has 9 gates, in devotional service there are 9 different types of activity. Nava Bhakti. Navalakshana Bhakti, that we can, and that begins with hearing and chanting. There's someone. Krishna's flute. Krishna's looking for someone. And just as Krishna's looking for someone, we should be looking for Krishna. Right? We have to look for Krishna. And this is the purpose of bhakti, cultivating our devotion for Krishna. Trying to understand how we can develop some feelings for Krishna. Bhakti can help us. Bhakti is the mood of rendering service. By service, we awaken some feelings for Krishna. To give a simple example, that just when sometimes couples' marriage is arranged, there will not be much feeling between the man and woman. But by the woman's service, then there will develop some feeling. As the wife serves her husband, they automatically, and a feeling will develop, some loving feeling will be developed. In the same way, we may not have attraction for Krishna, a feeling to want to serve him, but if we do service anyway, gradually that loving feeling will awaken. Padma Purana confirms this. Atashri Krishna Nambadi Nabhavegriyam Indriyani Sevan Mukhi He Jivado Swayam Eva Spurati Yata. That we cannot understand God by the material senses. God is far greater than we are. We are limited, imperfect, fallible beings. We make mistakes, we have imperfect senses, we're subject to illusion, and we cheat also. But we can't cheat Krishna. If we try to serve him, Krishna will reveal himself to us. And the process which is recommended for service is using the tongue to hear, using the tongue to chant the glories of Krishna. By chanting the name of Krishna and speaking his glories, we will awaken some attraction for that Supreme Being. The tongue, of course, is also used for tasting, as well as speaking and chanting. The tongue is used for tasting. Therefore, we can utilize that tongue for tasting food offered to Krishna. In this way, you can see how this body, which we described as a city of nine gates, that these different gates, they can all be purified. You know, just like in a city, if we have different gates, in Delhi, of course, there's many gates, right? There's Ajmeri gate, Lahori gate, and if they... You know, if they don't clean the gate, don't take away the rubbish regularly, so much rubbish, garbage will accumulate there at the gates get blocked up and nothing can move freely. So similarly with this body, if we don't purify the gates of this body, then we're simply accumulating so much garbage, so much contamination on the different gates of our body. And that contamination may be gross, and certainly it will be subtle. The subtle contamination there is there in the form of lust and greed, the desires to enjoy. So we have to purify these senses. We have to purify these different gates. And this is the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Purifying our tongue by tasting Krishna prasadam, and chanting the glories of Krishna. In the material world, what do we do with our tongue? We will simply speak nonsense. We will speak so many silly things, nonsense things. We will criticize others. That is also very common in the material world, because in the material world, everyone is envious of each other. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, because you are not envious of me, I am speaking to you. Srimad Bhagavatam also describes that this literature, Bhagavad Purana, is meant for those who are not envious. When we give up this envious mentality, then we become eligible to understand Krishna. But in the material world, we're all envious of each other. That is why we have fallen into the material world in the beginning, out of envy. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Icha Dvaisha Samutena Tanva Mohina Bharata. Desire and envy were our original sin, and they brought us into this material world. The desire to be the supreme, to enjoy like Krishna, and envy also of Krishna. Yeah, we envy Krishna more than we envy anyone else, because Krishna's the richest, Krishna's the most handsome, he's the strongest, he's the most famous, more than any of us. So when somebody's got more than us, then we envy them, right? And we will criticize them. We're envious of someone, they're better than us, so we will try to bring them down. How will we do it? We criticize them. We talk bad things about them. That is the business of the tongue. The mind will find faults in others and not see our own faults, and then make use of the tongue to speak these bad things. When we speak in this way, then we simply create another body in the material world. Nonsense talk breeds nonsense thought, which breeds nonsense actions, which causes again birth, old age, disease, and death. So this nonsense talk is what we refer to as prajaupa. Prajapa, or sometimes it's called Gramyakata, the village talk. The talk of the what is the talk in the village? People will talk about each other. Do you know what happened over there? Do you know what they did in their house? Did you hear about this person? You know, we have so many things to say about others. That is Gramyakata. But there is also Krishna Kata. Krishna Kata is purifying. The Gramya Kata, that is contaminating. That is disease condition. But Krishna Kata, that is purifying. Therefore, we want to hear, we want to, by hearing nicely, then we will also repeat the topics of Krishna. Repeating the topics of Krishna, we will be able to purify our senses. Just before I came in this room, I was hearing some of the young men, young boys and young girls, they were reciting to me beautiful slokas, so many slokas from Vedic Shastras. That is the perfect use of the tongue. So this Krishna consciousness mission is to give people this opportunity to use their senses in the service of Krishna, especially in the beginning of life. I heard there are many young children now here in Abu Dhabi who are all being trained to recite Vedic hymns and wonderful prayers and stotras from the Shastras. This is perfect use of the human form of life. Especially in the, and you may say, oh no, they're too young. This is should be done in old age. We should wait till we're old. When we retire, then we'll take this up. This is not for the, let people study the material world, enjoy the material world first. Then in old age we can become devotee. No, that is not right. The Shastra never says like that. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Komara charet pragno dharmam bhagavatam miha. That now you are Kumar, young boy, from Kumar means 5 years old. From age of five, one should begin to study this Vedic philosophy, this Vedic Shastra. Very important, because what they learn when we're young, we will never forget. So if we get the good start in life, it will be very valuable later on. But if you wait till the end of life, at the fag end of our life, very difficult. Very hard to teach old dog new tricks. You will say, well, I'm so old now, I cannot, no, I'm very, so yes, we must therefore in the very beginning, what is it? Subhashya sigram, something which is auspicious should be done immediately, cannot put it off. So we have to understand the value of this human form of life and use it for the important work. That is trying to learn, trying to understand our position in this material world and our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. The Krishna consciousness movement was established 500 years ago by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the incarnation, or who is actually, he's Lord Krishna himself, who has come to teach all of us how to be a devotee of Krishna. He has taught everyone how to practice devotion. Especially, he has taught us how to chant the name of God. This is the essential principle of devotion in this age, the chanting of the names of the Lord. Kali Yuga Dharm Hari Naam Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vininahi Tara Pravartan. That the Yuga Dharma for this age, for this Kali Yuga, what the religious process is Hari Naam Sankirtan. In other ages, there was meditation, sacrifices, and temple worship. But in this age, Kali Yuga, we cannot do these things. Who can sit and do meditation? Stop the mind, sit perfectly still. How can you do it? No chance, nowhere. Everybody is going to be disturbed after 5-10 minutes. Very difficult. Sacrifices, who is wealthy enough to perform a sacrifice? How many people can afford to put on even one sacrifice? It needs so much gold. Nobody is wealthy enough in this Kali Yuga to do a sacrifice. And temple worship also is a great challenge. Who is pure enough? Who can practice all of these different principles and rules and regulations which are required in proper temple worship? To go to a temple regularly and worship, very difficult. But everyone can chant the name of the Lord. That is very easy. That we can do anywhere. There is no regulation about time or place. So it is a very practical method. It is made very easy for people in this age of Kali Yuga. And the Lord came himself as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach all of us how we could achieve success in this human form of life. We may not know a lot of prayers and hymns as the young people are learning here, but we simply have to learn the Maha Mantra, which is the simplest of all hymns. The Maha Mantra. There are so many mantras, but there's one Maha Mantra, and that is just made up of three words. Hare Krishna and Rama. So everyone can chant that mantra. Even, you know, I'm preaching in China. And Chinese people, you know, they don't read English. They certainly don't read Sanskrit. They have a very difficult time to say even Krishna. Krishna. There's no sounds in like that in Chinese. But still, they learn to chant the Maha Mantra. Other mantras, you know, that many of the devotees, they say, I can't learn this Panchatattva Mantra. They have very difficult time to learn any Pranam Mantra. But Hare Krishna Mantra, even they can learn and they can chant. And they're very happy to chant. Many people now, many devotees in China, they are chanting. Many are retired people. They are chanting many, many rounds every day. They chant. Sometimes I'm asked, how many rounds do I need to chant to get initiated? And when I say, only 16, they say, oh, very easy. I chant 16 in the morning and 16 at night. Just recently, I was in some months ago, I went to Russia. In Russia, this was because going from China to Russia is on the border there between China and Russia, across the border from northern China into Russia. This is very northern part in the eastern Russia, far eastern Russia. Very cold place, minus 30, minus 40 in the winter time, many months of very cold weather. So we have some temples there, some devotees were there. We had one festival during the autumn season, and about 300 devotees came. And I noticed there was some young girl, only 9 years old. And I saw every time I saw her, she is chanting japa, chanting the Maha Mantra. And her parents told me that she is chanting every day without fail 16 rounds. Only 9 years old. So she cannot be initiated. She's too young, but she's qualified for initiation. Very nice young devoted girl. So there are many examples like this in foreign countries. Russia, China, Africa, all over the world. Love of Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. And it can be awakened if they have the opportunity to hear about Krishna. So I'm sure that you are certainly qualified to awaken your love for Krishna. If you take up this process of Krishna consciousness, you will find it to be very simple and also sublime. There is no doubt about it. Krishna consciousness is not dry, it is not boring, it is not a waste of time. It is all auspicious and beneficial for every living entity, benefits the whole world. Sometimes people challenge that, oh, what is the good of all this? Why are you wasting your time with all of this chanting and, you know, worshipping Krishna? It's not doing any good. But actually, this is doing the greatest good for the world, particularly the chanting of the holy names, because it destroys all types of inauspicious situations. All types of sinful activities are destroyed by the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. This is the power of Krishna's holy name. It is none different from the Lord himself. And it changes the face of the world. Just like some nations like, you know, America or whatever, who are the world powers, maybe China, India, they've all got their nuclear weapons. They've got their weapons of mass destruction, you know, and they threaten that, you know, we're going to release our bombs sometime to show you how powerful our weapons are. But we have also our weapons of mass destruction. Krishna, the Maha Mantra is the real weapon of mass destruction. It can destroy unlimited amounts of karma. The other bombs which these nations and political powers may have simply create karma. But our weapons destroy karma. Yes, that is the power of the Sankirtan movement. We want to destroy all this karma, because this karma, this is what is causing so much suffering, so much pain and misery in the world. And if we seriously propagate this chanting of the holy name of the Lord, then certainly it will do good for everyone. So we should have faith in this Krishna consciousness movement, take up these activities. So I will stop here. I will ask if anybody has any questions. Of paper, and people can write questions down
for your night discourse. I am going to ask not a question, more of a sharing. When we say that a person is in Krishna consciousness, when we read Bhagavad Gita, this phrase comes very often, a person in Krishna consciousness. My understanding of a person being in Krishna consciousness is when he continuously lives with a sense of detachment to material things around him and a sense of attachment to something which is not going to be destroyed. I would like your views on this. Is this, in the simplest words, I mean, Krishna consciousness can be explained in very large chapters, mm-hmm. and but for a common person who doesn't understand religion or much,
okay.
I would say that he should continuously remain with a sense that what I am seeing is going to be destroyed one day, so not too much attachment, and probably the power of Lord, or we call him Krishna or Rama, that is what is going to be always with me. Would you like to probably just something.
Yes, yeah, this is the quite a nice idea that we shouldn't have too much. The point is that the objects of this world, we shouldn't think of them as being mine. Just as I mentioned that we should not think of this body as being ourselves, in the same way we shouldn't think of the objects of this world to be related to our body. In other words, we think of my car, my home, my computer, my family, like that. That these things are given to us, but they're not eternally ours. They're given to us. We come together for some time, and in the same way we have to leave them. But if we see them in relation to Krishna, then that is proper vision. Understanding that these things are given to me by Krishna, they're Krishna's property, and Krishna has given them to me to take care of. Then that is proper with proper vision. Understanding this is Krishna's property, Krishna is, after all, the supreme proprietor, and what is given to me, it's not actually meant for my pleasure, but they're meant for Krishna's pleasure, because it's Krishna's property. So we use them in relation to Krishna. We don't just use them for our own enjoyment, but it's for giving pleasure to Krishna. This is ideal family life, for example. You know, if the man thinks the woman is for my enjoyment, and the woman thinks the man is for my enjoyment, then, you know, there's problems. The woman thinks the man is to serve me, and the man thinks the woman is to serve me. Each one is thinking, I'm the master. That's why we get so much divorce in the modern world. Because each person is trying to dominate the other. Everyone has the mood of being the enjoyer and being the master. No one wants to be the servant. We have to understand that Krishna is the true master, and we are all servants. Then we can be actually happy. Our position is not to be the master, but our position is to be servant, subordinate to Krishna. So seeing the objects of this world in relation to Krishna will keep us in proper knowledge. There's a one verse in Bhagavad Gita, actually, the final verse of the fifth chapter. Srila Prabhupada describes it as the peace formula, and he mentions three things which are required to be peaceful in this world. He said, first of all, to understand that everything belongs to Krishna. Secondly, is that everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And the final thing is that Krishna is our best friend. Now, then this is important, you see, because while we speak about, well, everything is Krishna, it's for his enjoyment, oh no, what is the good to me? You know, I'm going to lose out. Where am I going to come into the picture? We come into the picture when we understand Krishna is our best friend. He's our real well-wisher. He's there in our heart, guiding us and giving us knowledge and enlightening us, showing us the proper path, helping us to give us understanding how to act in the proper way. And if we take direction from Krishna, then we'll be happy, we'll be peaceful. But Krishna doesn't force us. He's not going to just come and demand that we have to do what he says. He gives us a choice. He gives us free will, how we want to act. Because he's a friend. He's considerate. He's not demanding. You have to do it. You have to listen to me. No, he said, well, it's up to you. I'm just trying to help. My advice is like this. If you want my advice, it's there. But I can't force. So... And at the same time, Krishna is not just any type, any ordinary friend. But, you know, if you have some friend who is famous or who is very powerful and wealthy and influential, won't you feel
happy about that? Won't we value that type of friendship more than any other friendship? So Krishna, of course, is Bhagavan. He has all opulence, wealth, beauty, fame, knowledge, strength, and renunciation. And he is our best friend. So certainly we should value this friendship more than any other friendship. Taking help, taking guidance from Krishna will be for our benefit, certainly. So Krishna consciousness is like that. Being conscious of Krishna. Understanding that he's a friend, a real friend to us. We have had some friends, you know, we come here, you come to Abu Dhabi, you have some friends, you go back to India, you have some different friends. Before you're married, you have friends, then you get married, you have different friends. Like that. You know, friends come and go. But Krishna is a special friend. He's with us, birth after birth, in this material world. And he's not going to forget us until he wants to see us succeed in this world. He wants to see us get out from this world. That is why he's with us in the heart as Paramatma, guiding us, instructing us, trying to help us, to show us the path out. Prabhu, yes?
You were speaking on the 9 ways of bhakti.
Yes. 9 ways of bhakti. So the first is by hearing and then by chanting. First we have to hear about Krishna. When we hear, then we can repeat. That is the chanting process. And by hearing and chanting nicely, then remembrance will become a natural step. So we will also remember. So the hearing, chanting, and remembering, the first three, then it can go on, that bhakti or service to Krishna can expand further into offering prayers. Just as these young men and girls, they're offering such nice prayers to Krishna. They have heard and they have practiced chanting, and they're perfecting it by coming in front of the deities in the temple room and offering the prayers. So that is another type of bhakti. And then worshipping. The deity appears, Krishna appears in his deity form, and one can offer worship to the Lord. Another type of bhakti. We can serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Serving the lotus feet of the Lord, like serving his pure devotees, like Srimati Tulsi Devi, the sacred plant, that is like serving the lotus feet of Krishna. One can become a servant to Krishna, just like Hanuman is the servant of Lord Rama. We can also serve the Supreme Lord. We can become a friend of the Supreme Lord. Although that is not such an easy thing to do, but that's a very high level of bhakti. And one can surrender everything, which is also a very difficult thing to do. So, of the 9 types of bhakti, we give emphasis on the first two, hearing and chanting. We must hear regularly, and we should also chant regularly. And gradually the other limbs, other types of bhakti can be practiced. Yes,
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
We give more importance to chanting, is it not?
Yes, but with our chanting...
My question is, what is the difference between chanting and singing? Singing the Krishna's glories, that's also glorifying Krishna.
There's no difference. That is chanting. Singing, chanting, yes, same thing.
So at times we can sing,
yes.
Glories also, bhajans also.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, that is kirtan, yes.
But so Maharaj, the point he is trying to make that we have got certain committed number of rounds.
Yes.
So, instead of those committed number of rounds, can we just sing the bhajans? That's his point.
No, you have to also chant the mantra also on your beats. That is required also. The kirtan can go on, but you have to also chant on the beats too. That you cannot say, oh, I did kirtan for 2 hours, so I'm not going to chant on my beats. No. Lord Chaitanya has instructed everyone has to chant on the beats regularly, a fixed number of times. Lord Chaitanya did this, Srila Prabhupada did this, and we are also following their example. You have to chant on the beats too. You see Brahmaji, he also has beats, he's chanting. All the great acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, all these great devotees, they all chanted on beads. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everywhere he went, he took his japa beads and he chanted. So, kirtan is going very good. Yeah, we do kirtan, but we must also chant on the beads. Japa, meditation. Kirtan is all very nice, yeah? But it's not that you're all day doing kirtan and no time for japa. There's also time for japa.
Now, Swamiji, while singing the glory or while kirtans, we feel more, what you call, tears come into our eyes. We feel more happy.
Very good.
That means our mind is cleansed, our body is cleansed. There is a presence of our Krishna, we have a connection with the Krishna. We feel. When we have, what you call, goosebumps on your body.
Okay.
And tears in your eyes,
yes.
You feel that you are connected to God, is it not?
Yes.
At the same time, that is happening during bhajans or kirtans. According to me, that's my feeling.
Yes.
When I feel, when I sing glories or kirtans, I feel that.
Yeah.
At the same time, during chanting, I'm not getting that feeling. That's my.
Then you have to do more chanting. Yeah, kirtan is very powerful. You're getting mercy. But you have to work harder on your chanting and you'll get the same ecstasy. It's the same name. It's the same Krishna you're chanting. It's just that you're not trying so hard. You have to try harder in the chanting. Then you will get also the same experience. Yeah. So you just keep chanting. Yeah, have faith, yeah.
Why is it specified? 16 rounds are required.
Yes, Prabhupada has set the standard. Actually, originally, the requirement was 64 rounds. Because 64 rounds, that is 1 lakh names. You see, so that it was considered 1 lakh names, that's good. You chant the Maha Mantra, 64 rounds, that's 1 lakh. But Prabhupada, very merciful, he saw, you know, we're very passionate, materialistic people. And if we ask you to all chant 64 rounds, none of you will do it. What to speak of 64, you know. Anyway, he reduced it. He said, oh, okay, 16 rounds, 16 is minimum. If you can chant more, you should, yeah. But minimum, you must do at least 16. That's his mercy. He considered 16 rounds should take 2 hours. Prabhupada considered if we do japa 2 hours a day, then that's pretty good. And then the rest of the time you've got, you know, you maybe you were working, you have other things, you know. But 2 hours a day, if you have 2 hours japa in the day every day, then that will give you a good Krishna conscious feeling, good substance in your life, a good basis for your spiritual development, chanting at least 2 hours a day. And some other days like Ekadasi and festivals, you can do more. But minimum 16. Some people, they do, you know, like Haridas Thakur, he was chanting 3 lakh names, means 196 rounds every day. For many years, he was chanting like that. So,
You know, what we're doing is very insignificant. 16 rounds, some people say, oh, 16 rounds, you know, I think 4 rounds is okay. Well, okay, 4 rounds, but you don't get, you know, you won't get Prabhupada's mercy chanting 4 rounds. You cannot be initiated, you know, it's very little, you know, 4 rounds. You must chant 2 hours, you should chant 2 hours on the beats, chant 16 rounds. Just like even other people who do the silent meditation, you know, they always do meditate, usually minimum 2 hours they do meditate. So our meditation is japa meditation, mantra meditation, 2 hours, it's not a long time. Any other points?
Maharaj, can you please explain the qualities of renunciation in relation to Krishna?
Quality of renunciation in relation to Krishna, nirmanda Krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya uchate. Actual renunciation in relationship to Krishna means to utilize everything in the service of Krishna and not for our own sense gratification. If we think that, oh, I have to give up this, that is phalgu vairagya. We're thinking, oh, this microphone, this is material, give it up, get it out, this is material. No, but using it to speak about Krishna and chant Krishna, that is yukta vairagya. Phalgu vairagya, false renunciation. Yeah. Someone sees some money in the street, they say, oh, money, maya, not going to touch it. That is the phalgu vairagya. He sees a 1,000 dirham or something, I won't touch it, you know. No, Maya. And the Karmi, he sees it, oh, okay, now I can go to Radharani's cake shop and get ice cream and cakes and everything. But devotee, he sees the money, he will take it and use it for Krishna, give it to Krishna, because he knows it all belongs to Krishna. I had the experience one time, I was telling that story, this example in Malaysia it was. So one man, he went home from the temple and he found money in the street. He actually saw a bill of, you know, some money lying in the street. So he said, well, I have to give it to Krishna. So he came the next day and gave the money to Krishna. So I hope that on the way home you will all find lots of money. Finally, remember, you have to come and give it to Krishna.
How Krishna is full of renunciation?
How is Krishna full of renunciation? Or Krishna's renunciation? Krishna has renounced that he does not take anything for his own enjoyment, that he is always thinking how to please his devotees. Although he is Bhagavan and he has all opulence, he does not think for his own enjoyment. He is a servant of his devotees. Krishna says, I am in the hearts of my devotees and my devotees are in my heart. My devotees do not know anyone but me, and I do not know anyone but my devotees. So Krishna is renounced in that sense that he is not thinking for his own satisfaction, for his own pleasure. But as the devotees want to serve Krishna, Krishna wants to serve his devotees. This is the beauty of his renunciation. Any other question, comment?
When we have a congregational Mangala Harati, but it's not related to this, but we have to worship the deity. We have a deity, say Radha Krishna deity, or Laddu Gopal, or whatever deities we have. We have to come to the congregational Mangala Harati, or we have to do independently worship the Mangala Harati and then come. And especially when Maharajas come.
Well, if you have your own deities, of course you should continue to do your own worship.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like in places where there was a big temple, an established temple with a big deity, many deities, then Prabhupada liked the devotees to come and not keep their own deities, but to come and do the worship in the temple. But, you know, for family people who have their own home and who have proper facilities to worship deities in their own home, then they can have their own worship in their home. They don't need to come. Of course, they're doing their own worship at home. So why do they need to come to temple? They have temple in their home. They're doing everything there. If senior devotees come, then it's certainly nice to be able to take advantage and associate with the devotees, take part, hear the program, hearing with them. It's not compulsory, but you know, it's desirable.
Congregational chanting is better than the individual chanting?
Congregational chanting is certainly very powerful. Yes. Congregational chanting is very powerful. And chanting also, japa in the association of devotees is very powerful. If we have difficulty chanting japa on our own, then it's recommended to chant in the association of other devotees. And that can help us to improve our japa.
Maharaj, just one more question. In the morning when we sing Mangala Arati, we start with Sansara Dhamaralana Vilupa. And as you read the translation, it appears that we are glorifying Guru, our own Guru Maharaj, not Krishna. So some devotees have the confusion like, why do we call that Mangala Arati? Why don't we call that Guru Arati? And after that, again, 7 o'clock, we sing the Guru Arati. So which one is the Guru Arati? This is the one Guru Arati, or the next one is the Guru Arati?
No, before we worship Radha and Krishna, first we have to approach the spiritual master. Therefore, we cannot go to worship Krishna without first of all going through the spiritual master. Therefore, in the Mangala Arati, we first of all sing Guru Vasika, and then we sing Hare Krishna.
So the Hare Krishna Kirtan is the Arati, Maharaj?
Yes, it's all part of the Arati. We don't immediately go to Krishna, but we have to first of all chant the Guru's name and worship the Guru through Guru Vasika prayers. And then we sing Panchatattva mantra and then Hare Krishna mantra. So like that. So certainly it's a Mangal Arati because it's, of course, it's worship of Krishna. The Guru Puja, that is something separate which we do, we close the deities and we worship Prabhupada directly. But the Mangala Arati, yes, certainly it's worship of Krishna. But we have to worship Krishna in the proper way. We cannot immediately go to Krishna. We have to go to Krishna through the medium of the spiritual master. So first of all, by worshipping the spiritual master, and then we can go to properly worship Krishna.
What about Maharaj singing Vibhavari Shesha like we have seen in Vrindavan and Mayapur Dham? So first they perform the Guru Arati, Guru Ashtakam, and then they sing the Vibhavari Shesha.
Yes.
So, like instead of Guru Ashtakam, can we sing directly Vibhavari Shesha?
No, in Vrindavan they're singing Vibhavari Shesha because Prabhupada Samadhi is there and they first of all sing Guru Vastika at Prabhupada Samadhi. If they were not singing Guru Vasika at Prabhupada Samadhi, then they would have to sing Guru Vasika in front of Krishna and Balaram and Radha Shamsundar. And before Prabhupada Samadhi, in Prabhupada's time, we always sang Guru Vasika there during the Mangal Arati. It was only after Prabhupada took Samadhi and his Samadhi was opened, then every morning we would have Prabhupada's Samadhi Puja there, the Mangala Arati would be performed at Prabhupada Samadhi. We'd sing Guru Vasika. And then it was suggested, since we've already sung Guru Vasika there, that we could sing this Vibhavari Shesha to the deities. But first there must be the Guru Vasika. You can't just sing Vibhavari Shesha and not sing Guru Vasika. No, first you sing worship the Guru. First you worship the Guru, then you worship Krishna. This is the etiquette. We don't go to Krishna directly. We must go to Krishna through the spiritual teacher. Especially the pujaris. They have to be very careful. One is pujari, he does not just simply walk in the altar and serve the deities. First he must go to the Vyasa San and offer obeisances to the spiritual master. Then he comes in and worships the deity. By the mercy of the spiritual master, we can approach Krishna. We cannot bypass the spiritual master.
One more thing about the Tulasi Arati. In fact, I am talking on behalf of the so many congregation members who have joined us recently.
Uh-huh.
They got all these doubts and
okay.
We try to explain them. But again, on the Tulasi Arati,
uh-huh.
Like, is it done in only our sampradaya or other three sampradayas also they perform the Tulasi Arati? Or why is it so important that we perform separate Tulasi Arati? Whereas while during the Mangala Arati,
uh-huh.
That time also we offer three times
uh-huh.
all the paraphernalia what we are offering to Krishna.
Uh-huh.
So why do we perform separate Arati for Tulasi Devi?
Tulasi Devi is a pure devotee. I've seen in South India, in many homes, people also keep Tulsi plants, and I've seen the ladies that they will come and they will offer respects and some incense and circumambulate Tulsi. It's understood in all Hindu society that Tulsi is a sacred plant and very auspicious. In our own line of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, yes, we worship Tulsi. We offer this Tulsi Arati every morning. It is very auspicious. Tulsi is a pure devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada instructed us, and it's done in all the Gaudiya Vaishnava temples. I don't know about the other sampradayas, but certainly all Hindu temples, you always see Tulsi there. They may not be doing the arti, but they keep Tulsi because they know very sacred plant. They may not do the puja, but if we're doing the puja, you know, it's certainly it's purifying. It's another part of bhakti. It's more blessings, you know. It's more advancement on the spiritual path. Tulsi is auspicious in all respects. Huh? Simply by seeing, touching, remembering, bowing before, praying to. Anyone who comes in touch with Tulsi and lives eternally in the Vaikuntha world. So there's so much power in Tulsi Devi. Just by keeping Tulsi in your home, you can make your home auspicious. So certainly we should take advantage of Tulsi Devi. Not that we should be thinking, oh, why do this, why do that? No, we should be very happy that this is an oh, very nice, very powerful. I've seen how much people's homes and how much their lives have changed just by keeping Tulsi plants in their home. How their homes become transformed, the atmosphere changes. It's so purifying. The effect is so powerful. Our blessings are so great. So yes, we should take advantage of Tulsi. We will see. All temples all over the world, Hindu temples all over the world, they honor Tulsi. And certainly in our own temples, we have great importance to Tulsi. Some temples even, they do the marriage between Shaligram and Tulsi in Malaysia, in our temple. Although, this is not really in our line to do this, but some temples, they like to do this, and it's very nice ritual, nice ceremony to have Tulsi married to Shaligram. It's one of the ceremonies on our calendar. So many auspicious situations by the grace of Tulsi. And Tulsi leaves, of course, are very important because offerings to Krishna, Krishna says that he will not accept offerings, even though they may be so luxurious and many varieties, without Tulsi. And in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palantoyam, that Patram, that is Tulsi. Not just any leaf, but that's the Tulsi leaf Krishna wants. So Tulsi is very dear to Krishna. Krishna's from Vrindavan, huh? Vrindavan, Vrinda, the land of Tulsi. certainly dosa is very important. Okay, so we will stop here. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada.